Welcome to Top Advisor Marketing, where you will learn how to become a prolific online influencer, attract more ideal clients, and grow your practice. Brought to you by Top Advisor Podcasting, a done-for-you podcasting solution built just for trusted advisors. And now, your co-hosts of Top Advisor Marketing, Kirk Lowe and Matt Halloran.
Hello and welcome to another Top Advisor Marketing podcast. We have a return guest who I happen to be a huge fan of. Her and Steve Wershing were on the podcast just a little while ago, and Julie was one of our first guests that we ever have. Julie Littlechild, who is a speaker, writer, and the founder of AbsoluteEngagement.com. We are going to talk today about her latest blog post, which is the 11 Steps to Extraordinary Client Experience. And the super cool thing about talking about this today is Julie has been working on a whole bunch of infrastructure stuff. So she's got this great offer that we're going to talk about at the end of the show today. So, Julie, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much. Thrilled to be back.
Yeah. Well, I loved this blog post. One is because I'm a huge fan of infographics, and I love how this infographic on this blog really draws my eyes, and it just makes sense. There's 11 steps. So do you mind if we start there and then we can deconstruct some of the steps as we go?
Yeah, absolutely.
Cool. Hit me. What's number one?
Well, and just so you know, I mean, for a little context, what you're referring to is something that we felt had been kind of missing with client experience, and that was a framework, right? Because we were always talking about different strategies and different tactics, but it's hard to know where those fit in and what we should do first and what we should do next. So really, probably for the first time in many respects, took the time to step back and say, what is the total framework for designing a client experience? So that's what we're looking at. And the first step, in a way, is about vision. It's about defining your niche or ideal client or target, and we bandy a lot of words around there. But really, the question is, who are you designing your client experience to support?
How do you get advisors to take that step? We did talk about this with you and Steve just a little bit, and it seems to be a reoccurring theme on the podcasts that we still find that there are advisors who are hesitant, almost to the point of adamant resistance to really coming up with a niche. So how do you guys do that?
Well, and I'd agree, first of all, that we get a lot of resistance. And to some extent, I would say I might take the path of least resistance here. And only because what I happen to believe to be true may not be the right approach for everyone. And I would hate this to become the sticking point. So what I do believe is that you do need to design your client experience to support someone. If you have a niche, and a niche can be a target audience or a niche can be a specialization, and some advisors are certainly drawn naturally to that, maybe fearful of taking that step, but do feel drawn to a particular niche. And so our goal is to help them really understand what that is, what it means, and then how to take action on that comfortably. Having said that, I think the other way to look at this is to say, if I don't want to have a clear niche, at a minimum, I need to identify my top one or two client segments and build around those. Good. I find a lot of advisors just find that a little more comfortable. And in fairness, I don't know if it's the best approach, but the best approach is sometimes whatever helps you take action.
Sure. And if you don't know who you're trying to create an experience for, the rest of these 10 steps are going to be a little nebulous, right? I mean, that's like number two is segmenting your clients. Well, you can't really segment your clients if you don't know what the segmentation lines are going to be.
Well, that's it. And what ends up happening, I think, is that we start designing around what we believe is common to everyone. And look, it's not bad. We end up with good service. We can design a nice, you know, we can segment based on value. We can define an offer. We can automate that and create workflow and process around it. A lot of that you can do with limited definition of your ideal. But the issue is, I think, that you get to good service, you don't get to deep engagement. So we're a little more interested in what is required to create something that really is extraordinary.
And so many advisors say that they provide that extraordinary service. In fact, I was just talking to an office yesterday, and they're using the word legendary. And I said to the CEO of the company, I said, well, what does that mean? Can you give me an example of legendary service? She's like, wow, that is a problem, isn't it? Because
it is. Yeah. Did they ever get there?
No. No, but no. They need to, and they need to look at, I'm going to send them this blog post. I'm going to make sure that they listen to this podcast, and they'll probably end up hiring your firm because this is not something that we do. You're the best at it anyway. Why would we even go into this marketplace? But you have done, and I love how you detached yourself from it to make yourself have an objective step-by-step way to do it. And Julie, that's why I think you've been so successful for so long, is because you understand how advisors' minds work. They need to have a structure. They need to have the process. They like that sort of stuff because it's quantifiable. And you've always done a great job with that. Okay, so first step, define your niche or ideal client. Number two, segment your clients. What's number three?
So in the next few steps are really about laying a strong foundation. And my belief is that you need to do that. You need to think about, you know, profit. You need to, you know, understand efficiency before we can even move into the more advanced stages. So the laying a strong foundation, just as you mentioned, segmenting your clients based on value, then defining what it means to be a client in each of those segments. What is the offer? What is the frequency of contact, the scope of the service? How is that being delivered? It's really just saying, what does it mean to be an A, B, or C client in my business? That's the next step, getting clear on that.
Wonderful. All right. So keep going, because a lot of these are kind of hand in hand.
Sure. Yeah. And that does link to the fourth step, which is assess capacity and profitability, which I always feel is a missing step. This is about doing the math. So if I have segmented, if I have then defined how often I'll meet clients and the scope of service, the question that is often unasked is, do we actually have the capacity to do this? Mm-hmm. And is it profitable? So we like to pause at that moment and really dig in to say, what will it take to deliver what you've just defined as a good, solid baseline level of service? And based on what you're delivering, is it in fact profitable?
All right. I have always found that people will say, well, Matt, you know, they've got $10 million with me. I make $25,000 on them a year. But when you talk about what services you're actually delivering and time and breakdown and how much team time they take, the profitability becomes not as clear and outright as, oh, I'm making $25,000 on them a year. No, they could be your least profitable client, especially if you're not breaking down your communication and your client service matrix the way. Now, this next one is, I think, one of the more groundbreaking pieces of this. And I know that Steve, who is on the Steve Wershing, for those of you who don't know, who works with Julie on some of this, and they have a great podcast that we'll make sure that we have in the show notes. This co-creation of the client experience, can you really unpack that? This is where I think the meat is really in this blog post. Talk about that, please.
Sure. And this next step really, in my mind, is a reflection of at least one of the things that's fundamentally changing in the world around us about client engagement. And I just think we owe it to ourselves to listen and to watch and to understand what is changing and bring it back to our industry. So co-creation of value, look, I didn't come up with that concept. It's been around academically since the 70s. But the idea here is that the role of the client is fundamentally changing. We're shifting from firm-centric value. You know, I create a widget and here's what it looks like. Hope you like it. It's in blue and I sell it. Mm-hmm. That's firm-centric value. We're shifting to a true client-centric value, which is not only thinking about the client, which I think we do in this industry, it's about designing the experience with the input of the client and in fact actively involving them in the delivery. So there's a spectrum. So co-creation of value can be everything from inviting clients into the conversation, understanding what they consider extraordinary to be, designing the experience around their challenges and their needs, right on through to technological advances. So as we look at a greater interaction. If we look at technologies that are being used during review meetings to do scenario planning, those are also representative of co-creation of value because the client is actively involved in the experience.
Before we merged our companies, Kirk and I, well, I used to call them market research events, which is very similar to what you're talking about. And my clients, every client that I did that for had said to me, why in God's name didn't I ask them before? Because the clients were giving them so much great input. I'll give you a great example is one of the client communication pieces. And we're going to talk about that here in just a couple of steps, the what you do to communicate. But I had asked them about the client communication. And every time I did it, the number one thing that they said they wish the advisor would stop doing was a market commentary. They're like, we don't read this. It's not the focus. We don't even talk about this stuff in client meetings. And that was a really big piece. And so, of course, I would flip that because this is what you're supposed to do as a, you know, a mediator, a moderator. I would say, hey, well, what do you really like? And it was always the, oh, my gosh, you know, when Sally had her baby and, you know, when your son graduated from college and, you know, all of that human stuff. But now understand that obviously we have a job to do, but that's what they really loved. And so I'm kind of feeding you into this the next couple of points here. So let's go. With the map and then talk about the communication plan.
Yeah, and I do think they're all connected for sure. And the one thing I would also say about co-creation is sometimes clients have a hard time when you ask them for broad input. It's you get a bit of a deer in the headlights kind of look. And with co-creation of value and moving into journey mapping, we're not just interested in how do you think we're doing, right? That's client feedback. The input, and one of the ways that I really like to ask for input and recommend constantly is to ask clients to describe the most extraordinary experience they've ever had or an experience that has had the greatest input, and then peel back the onion from there to understand why, to really get under the skin and say, why was that so extraordinary? Because that's when you're going to get at what is fundamental here. So just as to wrap up that, but what does sort of push us into the next step, which I also would say is a very different approach. It's client journey mapping, essentially. And it does reflect, again, what is happening in the world around us. It is used by some of the most progressive firms that are out there. It just hasn't been used at an advisor level that much, and I believe it needs to be. So client journey mapping is it rather than building an experience around our offer, which I would suggest a service matrix does. When we do a service matrix, you know, here's how often we're going to need, here's what the offer is. This is about stepping back and saying, what is the client's journey? What are the stages that they go through? What are they thinking, feeling, and doing at each of those stages? And then how can we support them on that journey? It's a design approach rather than a tactic that uncovers opportunities to innovate. And if you look around us, you see it in all sorts of different firms and brands and organizations. And I would say the fundamental difference with client journey mapping is that it changes the question we ask in a way. So rather than saying, well, like let's look at Starbucks or something, it's kind of an obvious example. Rather than Starbucks saying, how do we make better coffee, which I'm sure they did ask themselves, they asked another question, which was, how does coffee fit into our customers' lives? And that's where the innovation took place. It's totally the environment. Right. And you see this everywhere. So with client journey mapping, what we're encouraging advisors to do is also that you've got a good process. Yes, you deliver good service. We've got the data to prove it. Clients are satisfied. They're loyal. The next question is, how does what you do fit into their lives and how can you support them with their challenges? And that's, you know, and as you said, that does lead into the next step, which is the communications plan. So we like to say to map out the client journey, go deep on what is happening in the minds of clients, and then the communications plan should support that. So rather than, and again, this is where innovations start to come up, because until you ask yourselves, what are clients really experiencing at each stage, the innovation isn't clear, and we default to the market commentary and to the things that are nice. So this is about teasing out, you know, communications that could be very different, but infinitely more impactful.
Yeah. Oh, that was poetic. You know that? I mean, I'm sorry. All right.
And am so, I feeling a little Shakespeare?
I don't know. You're definitely coming across as being. Okay. I'm gonna summarize up until where we are right now very quickly. So number one, define your niche or ideal client. Segment your clients. Create your client service matrix or create your service matrix. Assess the capacity and profitability of what you're offering. Co-create the client experience. Map out the client journey. Create a client communications plan. Now, the last part is, well, this next one, structure the business around ideal client. This is, so your Starbucks question was fantastic, right? What Starbucks asked the question, how does coffee, you know, work into our clients' daily lives? And that's one of the reasons why they're so efficient and fast. And, you know, they have 20 people working behind the counter and they try to smile most of the time, you know, because you're pre-coffee. So you need that extra, you know, love shown.
A little bit.
And, but then the next one, so structuring the business around the ideal client is as groundbreaking as it would be if more advisors did this, we're a little bit behind the times in doing that because there have been so many other businesses. Zappos is a great example. Mm-hmm. Looking at what they, you know, they sold shoes, but they didn't want to just sell shoes. They wanted people to have an amazing shoe buying experience that was super convenient, super easy. Help us understand how you take those first points and then start structuring your business around that ideal client.
Well, I think that the simplest way that I like to think about it is to think about if you're designing an experience around a client, it's about everything that we've talked about. So now you understand who they are. You understand their journey. You've got some communications in place, but that leaves everything else. So if you looked around your business, truly sat back and looked at your everything from your client acceptance criteria through the office environment, through the process you have in place, through the partnerships, are they all intentionally designed to support this ideal? Would they be different if you worked with a different target market? If the answer is yes, then I think we're really on to something. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that where we see this coming to life is things like, you know, I work with a certain niche or a certain client segment, and therefore, we've set up our office in a certain way because it leads to certain kinds of conversations. We have gone out and actively pursued specific designations or certifications that are needed. We've introduced new products and services that relate to this. We have established external partnerships with other professionals because they bring something to the table for our ideal. So it's almost looking everywhere in every corner of your business and asking if it is designed to support this ideal. And if it is, then all of a sudden you've got something fundamentally different, something nobody can really compete with because it's baked into your very being this target market, and that's where I think it is often overlooked, but it's some of the more subtle things that can just completely differentiate us.
And then you take that even to the next level, which is the core processes.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about that.
Yeah, and I'm never sure where to put process in this. And then I've decided it comes after you've really defined everything that you're doing. I don't consider myself a process expert, but what is very clear is that we need to deliver on everything that we've just established. So once we've defined the experience, it really does become about how can I deliver this in an automated, consistent, and robust way. And that would involve technology. It would involve workflow. But we've really got to get down to that level. Otherwise, it's just a pipe dream.
Yeah. Now, manage client expectations.
Yeah, we map out these beautiful plans in our heads, don't we? And we we go through this process and we design this marvelous client experience, and then for some reason we don't tell anybody about it. And I've never entirely been clear on why that is. But this is a fairly obvious step, and it's stated just to be complete. Once we've got this, we've got to tell people what they can expect. And what we do know from the research is that there is a stronger correlation between experience and satisfaction or engagement when people know what to expect, when they don't just think it's a happy coincidence. So this is really just about sitting down with clients and ensuring that they understand what you deliver, that they understand what you deliver not only when you're across the desk, but when you are, you know, when they're not around. And reminding them and reinforcing that value over time.
It's behavior modification, and so many advisors are so involved with behavioral finance and how people are interacting with news and markets and all of those things, but they don't realize that it's as granular and as not simple, but as important as what you are talking about there. This is one of the reasons why we have such a high divorce rate in this country, is because people don't set clear expectations, communicate those expectations, and reinforce those expectations to their significant others. You're in a lifelong relationship, hopefully, with your clients. If you're not doing this, or if your communication and expectations aren't congruent, right? So for instance, so you're sitting down and Julie, you're a client of mine. I'm saying, Julie, you know, it's not about market performance. It's not about this. It's about making sure that you hit your goals and that you're able to do the things that you've worked so hard for. And then my next piece of communication talks about the world is coming to an end because the S&P took a 0.25 drop, right? That's the sort of stuff that is not congruent. Now, this is where the last step of your blog here, the last step of this 11 steps to the extraordinary client engagement, is another thing that most advisors don't do. They will try something, their follow-up is atrocious, they don't gather any data on the success of it, and then they just abandon it. So talk about how you have always consistently, because this is how I met you 15 years ago, or 10 years ago, however long, God, it feels like, I don't know, it was a while ago, right?
I don't know.
I don't either. But you were sending out these client surveys that were incredibly impactful. So let's talk about the last step here.
Yeah, look, I mean, we talked about co-creation of value, which was inviting input into the client experience. And client feedback, in my mind, is about measuring that and looking for gaps and looking for changes that are coming so that this entire framework that we've just walked through is always current and always reflects what is changing. So, look, as you say, always been a huge believer in client feedback. In fact, my world has come full circle because I stepped away from doing that for some time, and now we're delivering it again because I feel it is such an important tool to have. And whether that is qualitative or whether it's quantitative, there are different ways to deliver this. I just think it's absolutely critical that we do, you know, we do the analytics, that we have a way to reach out to clients. And in addition to providing us with feedback, there's also compelling research that highlights the connection between asking for feedback and engagement. It's extraordinary. Yeah. And so there's no reason not to do it. Usually it's fear, but that's just not, I'm afraid, a good enough reason for most of us.
Yeah. In this blog that we're going to have attached to the show notes, there is a link that people can download an assessment. So as we wrap up today's podcast, would you mind talking a little bit about how this, your current client experience assessment, can help advisors gain a greater understanding of where they're maybe falling short in any of these 11 steps?
Sure thing. And look, we wanted to create something that was relatively simple, that just put the framework in front of you to allow you to think about, do we really have this step locked down? We could have gone so much deeper. We chose not to. So this is a simple assessment. You can download that. You can assess where you're at on each of these 11 steps. And the hope is what that will do is highlight where you need to start. And that lets you filter out a lot of the noise that we all face day in and day out, and just get you laser focused on where do I need to start so that I can continue to build an experience that makes sense.
You offer a helping hand if needed. You offer one-on-one help with these 11 steps and all of that. What is the best way for people to reach out to you to engage you?
Well, I think just reaching out to me via email is very easy to do. We can also, there's a link, I believe, in the blog post where you can book just time to talk about this. But yeah, and this is relatively recent, the one-on-one coaching. For so many years, I focused on the research and the content and the models and speaking and workshops. But the most consistent question I've received is, can you help me? Can mm-hmm. you just take me by the hand, provide the accountability, help me when I need it? And until we were at a point where we had the infrastructure in place to do that, I wasn't comfortable taking that step. Mm-hmm. We do now, and I'm excited to be able to finally work at that level with advisors and putting the plan in place.
Please go to absoluteengagement.com. Follow Julie on Twitter and LinkedIn, because she's always putting out great stuff. She's also sharing great stuff from other people. Make sure you connect. This is Ideal Marketing, everybody. Top Advisor Marketing Podcast is what this is called. And when you look at these 11 steps, you create a marketing expectation. So whether it's referrals from existing clients, communicating who you are to centers of influence, or even in your sales process, or if you're doing educational workshops, making sure you build in these expectations and breaking them down by these 11 steps will allow you to have a much clearer and greater understanding of who you are and what makes you truly unique and different. So, Julie, thank you very much for your time today. As always, we really appreciate it.
Absolutely. It's been great talking to you.
If you have not subscribed to the podcast yet, make sure you click that subscribe now podcast button below. And if you know an advisor that you've had these conversations with, in fact, I'm going to email this blog to two of the advisors who I've talked to very recently. Surprisingly enough, we just had conversations about this within the last week. I'm going to make sure that I share this podcast and the blog. If you would like to do that, it's super easy to do. Just click that share button below. And make sure that when you connect with Julie, that you subscribe to her podcast too, which we will make sure is in the show notes. For everybody at Top Advisor Marketing and everybody at Absolute Engagement, this is Matt Halloran, and we'll see you on the other side of the mic very soon.
Are you ready to change the way you communicate with your clients? Are you tired of being the best kept secret in your area? Learn how to become a prolific online influencer, attract more ideal clients, and grow your business. Contact us today and see what the power of podcasting can do for your business. Click on the Contact Us link on our website at topadvisormarketing.com and set up a call to learn more. Follow us on LinkedIn and Facebook for more updates and information.